Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
another reading of the research paper titled A Hands-on IoT Training Device. Peter Colin Hill, Glenbrook, New South Wales, abstract: a Wi-Fi battery-powered sensor module for student use is described. Diverse sensors simultaneously stream data. This supports active discovery of the connection between experimental variables. The functions of a commercial device that the model emulates are examined, and teaching strategies proffered. Introduction. We're currently developing a small transparent suitcase containing 14 sensors to provide students with a hands-on introductory experience. This box of electronics streams data to the internet, but unlike a person-centered device, there is no keyboard or screen. It is an example of a thing that is connected to the internet rather than a user connection. The situation where there are lots of things sending data and receiving instructions has been dubbed the Internet of Things and has attracted the three-letter acronym TLA of IoT. When developed, students will lift the lid of the utility box UB to find a live sensors continuously outputting to a website. Scanning a QR code in the box will open the linked site. Typically, the first question asked is, what's in the box? It is the subsequent questions that tease out the deeper, a deeper understanding. This article aims to provide a resource for teachers to read over and perhaps check back on when answering those in-depth questions. Now, with in-depth, it has to be one word. I'll check. What the utility box does. The utility UB is a working model that is 5 times larger in each linear dimension than a sensor to cloud station you might expect to see currently used in a factory or home. The UB takes up 125 times the volume of units offered online. Unlike the real thing, a student can pull out sensors and put them on an experiment, on their experiment. As they build, they can explore systems by watching multiple variables change together. The ultimate aim is to build confidence. Build confidence in instill. The pen's got sort of blippy bips. In the understanding the use of the real thing. In the understanding and use of the real thing. Offering a comparative abundance of temperature, mass, and pH sensors ready to go in the construction of an experiment may make some concepts more accessible, robust, and less contrived. An example of a classic experiment reconfigured to access more concepts is the acid-base neutralization. The student first speculates which variables might or might not be important. Then places the sensors to see some show little or no effect, while others, as might they might expect, might have expected, as others as might be expected, vary together. The experiment is run on to see what happens. The amount of acid added will be measured as an increase in mass of the mixture. The pH may have a rapid rise at first, plateau, and then increase again. Behavior, this is the behavior of buffer commonly found in systems that need to maintain a pH balance, I think the word. In variable conditions like your skin, stomach, or reference standards to calibrate the pH meters. Currently, with more sparse instrumentation, such phenomena are rarely touched upon. The simple addition of another test, another latest and greatest equipment offering, and may have limited impact. Having insightful teacher guidance will dramatically improve the student's confidence and depth of understanding. Okay. I think to see how the UB is similar and dissimilar to a commercial, I think it compares with, to see how a UB compares with a commercial sensor. We will get to know what is inside the latter. Doing so provides a clear reference point to compare with. Doing so provides clear reference points to compare with the UB, but also assess the latest technology that will have emerged since the writing of this guide. That's maybe not compare. What a real-world utility box looks like. For real is the informal colloquial way of describing the real-world thing to which the model corresponds. It might be a toy car rolled down a ramp. Unlike a real-world car, for which we can assume most people have detailed knowledge and hence requires no explanation, we will step through the many layers of ideas behind both the UB and its real-world counterpart. Now, I can see that. Unlike the real-world car, for which we assume most people have detailed knowledge, and hence this is new. Okay. This is unfamiliar. In 2016, a US electronics manufacturer, Texas Instruments, released the CC2650 sensor tag, humidity, ambient and non-contact temperatures, microphone, light, pressure and 9-axis accelerometer. Values measured by the instruments on board a sensor tag are streamed in real time to the user's website. The sensor tag is powered by a button cell battery, 1 year lifetime, and comes in a 14x50x67mm package. The term tag refers to a smallish box of electronics that can communicate information. Many people have an e-tag fitted in their cars to pay tolls. Well, that's a bit bad. So that they can pay tolls, yeah. A tile is the name of a device with a smaller footprint, typically 3x24x24mm. You might have a Bluetooth locator tile on your keys to find them using an app on your mobile phone. Texas Instruments describes their sensor tag in the hands of a customer who's just unboxed it. Connect to the cloud with Bluetooth low energy and get your sensor tag online in 3 minutes. In this context of communication with an education order, some of whom are not technical, will unpack some of the technology and associated terminology. In the context, how sensors produce digital outputs. Sensors are purpose-built machines that respond to some physical property, temperature, humidity, pressure, sound, etc. This response can be measured or using less formal language seen. For a bulb thermometer, the temperature can be read by looking at the level of the mercury against a scale. Strictly speaking, you measure the thermometer's response and infer the temperature. To measure humidity, two thermometers are read. One a dry bulb, the other a wet one, wrapped in a moist cloth. In dry conditions, the wet one is cooled by evaporation. Referring to a conversion table will allow the humidity to be inferred from the differences in the wet-dry bulb temperature. No different means 100% humidity. If it was 100% humidity and 38 degrees, you'd find this uncomfortable as your perspiration would not cool you down. In an electric sensor, the physical property is that is to be measured impacts the conditions of an electrical component that then varies the current or potential difference across it. Informal voltage. This across this component. Yeah. Don't worry. In a circuit. For sensing temperature, a temperature-dependent resistor might be used. Using the phenomena of electrons moving from a cool end of a wire, I'd say if it were alternatively. Alternatively, using the phenomena of electrons moving to the cooler end of a wire, a temperature-sensitive battery called thermocouple can produce a voltage related to the temperature. The size of response depends on the conditions, so the measuring the size is a proxy for the condition, and such measurement is called analog. For instance, 0 degrees C may generate 0 volts, 50 degrees may 0.3, and 100 0.6 volts to an output wire that tells or signals the, in this case, temperature. The wire, the output wire, this output wire is known as the signal wire. A signal for which the size tells us how much is called an analog signal. To address the characteristics of different types of temperature sensors, the current UB has 5 thermocouples and 5 thermistors. Several steps have to be added before the sensor spits out a string of zeros and ones that communicates the size of the signal digitally. A sensor that puts out a digital signal, low or high voltage levels or light for an optical fiber, is called a digital sensor, e.g. digital thermometer. The signal does not output direct read numbers in one, but measurable outputs that are then interpreted as numbers. See, this is really careful with kids. A 0 is for 0 volts, while 1 is for 3.5 or 5 volts, depending on the type of material used to make up the electronics. The precision of the chip is... Okay, the conversion of an analog signal to a digital signal is called A to D. It's performed by an A to D chip. The precision of the chip is described by the number of bits. One bit of an A to D converting analog signal of 0.6535 volts in a range 0 to 1 would read 1, telling you that your signal was somewhere in the range of 0.5 to 1 volts. The temperature sensor chip used in the UB is 12 bit, or one part in 4096, and this is all, more or less typical. Every chip has a unique factory set 64-bit serial identification number, so every sensor not only gives the temperature, but who is sending it. A sinister side to this may be that if you're given a hairdryer, for example, consider the year 2025, you might not know disconnected to the cloud, giving the sensor serial number and IP address. You may need to move somewhere else, and you could be located when you dry your hair. The information in the above paragraph is perhaps too complex to communicate immediately to a student audience. The following story is an allegory of how a digital sensor works. The Night Kittens of Umbolu. The Grand Hotel is a splendid old building that stands on the bank of the Umbolu River. The river runs through the mighty Umbolu rainforest. This rainforest is home to the precious Umbolu night kitten. These kittens are very timid and only trust the Umbolu tribes. I'd say tribes people. One day, Unato, the youngest child of a family of 13, heard a purring sound from deep in the jungle. When she was back home that evening with her family, she imitated the sound she had heard, and to their surprise, a night kitten came into the hut and purred with her. Before long, news spread to the other 9 villages in the Umbolu rainforest, and the children who could purr in just the right way, sometimes after hours of practice, began to have night kittens visit them. There was great joy and much talk of this wonderful happening as the tribe people met along the tracks and in the meadows. They would describe the wondrous events. Unato purred, her father said proudly, and a little night kitten came in and purred and slept on her lap. That's strange, our kitten was only the size of a mouse. That's strange, ours is so big it would hardly fit through the door. Let's go to the Grand Hotel by the river and get to the bottom of this. There were 10 tables in the grand ballroom of the hotel. One on each table sat the kitten table, a table from each village, while opposite them sat a ranger from the Save the Kittens International. They were going to find out the size of all 10 Umbolu kittens and send the information downriver. River transport was very slow in those days, and there were many rapids and sudden waterfalls. Instead, they were going to use the Umbolu drums that could be heard for miles and then relayed. But they had to have a plan to report the size of each kitten the children had tamed. So this. On table number 1, the ranger had piles of poker chips that double for each stacks, 1, 2, 4, 8, 64, 128. The plan was to push the large pile forward, and if the child smiled, the kitten was larger than 128 poker chips. If they frowned, the ranger would pull back the pile and push the 64 pile forward. It turned out that table's 1 kitten was the size of 31 poker chips. So the arrangement was 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, and up, and 32, 64, 128 back. We're using the up-down number code 11111000. They just didn't ask the kitten tamer as, you know, just getting through. Get into a drum beat as they had to make it into a drum beat. Initially, the ranger tapped the code out with their feet. That was too quiet. Then tapping the table. That was too quiet. That was also. Okay. Sorry. Finally, they used small gongs. Oh, I make so many errors here, mate. There was one more thing to do to make sure they knew what table was reporting, so the drums, so the drummer outside the hotel would. Would strike the number of times equal to the table number and wait for the ranger to report. And then they would relay it up with a report. Yeah, I think so. So, 1 for a drum beat, 0 for gaps. The drums outside the hotel went 1-1-1-1-0-0-0. They listened to her back 11100001 gongs. That's 7 plus 135 Pokéchips. That's a big kitten. Are you sure? 11100, same thing. Let's try table 6. Listen, 0100, that's only 2. Finally, all the information came out and was sent down the Umbaloo River, and this is what the Umbaloo Herald received to publish. Okay, so this is sort of a homework problem there. Successful communication to students requires a collaboration of disciplines, sometimes referred to as a transdisciplinary approach. While teachers may pass over opportunities to bring in their eTag or IoT products because the concepts are overly technical, engineers avoid imprecise language. Some of the terms and how things are explained reflect expert user origins. Cameras, printers and peripherals will often have a Twain directory. Twain means toolbox without an interesting name, while URL means universal resource indicator. The initial feedback from engineers is that there's tension between night kittens and Pokéchips. There is no foolproof formula for what will be successful in education. There are examples of odd mixes: Gingerbread House, Samurai Pizza Cat, Sailor Moon, Cat Miraculous Ladybug, or the 1970s cars that drive in space to form a robot in the original Voltron. While there is no formula, you will be told by the student. You'll be told what works by the student audience. That's if a particular combination is credible. Even though they're all stupid, are they? Here, Pokéchips could suggest some sort of social danger or element of crisis just out of focus. The selection of the name Utility Box leverages the popular culture in which Utility Belt, in which the which primes the students to open and use it. The prototype UB under development, teaching resources such as this will go through tuning, addition, subtractions, or just become a footnote. Is that two? Yeah. A footnote. That stimulated a much better idea. Thus, it can be seen as a prototype. Further, teachers can read into it a schematic level, much like a circuit diagram. A small number of students will be interested in the steps to turn an analog sensor into a digital sensor. One, something happens, an environmental factor changes an electrical property of a device or a component. Two, voltage changes, electricity is provided to create a potential difference, signal volts, on an output signal wire. Signal snapshot. The signal is put into a circuit that mirrors the signal when set to sample, but freezes when set to hold. It is called a sample and hold and provides a steady snapshot of the signal for the rest of the A to D to work on. It is equivalent to think of a number, now remember it, and we will guess it. Digital approximator. Another circuit goes to work guessing the signal to H level with a succession of more precise approximations. The component that stores the evolving estimate is called a successive approximation register, or SAR. Register in electronics means memory that is written during a writing phase and later read. Think of a register as a piece of paper on which key information is written, like a shopping list or homework. We will walk through the key steps using... using the compiling of a shopping list as an example. Writing is like going through your cupboards at home and jotting down what you need. Reading the list comes when the chopper systems ask, what would you like? And finally, erasing or rubbing out the list when you list so you can write on it again. Change that to so. In the SAR, the writing is recorded in switches that are toggled on and off. Beginning with the erase step, all switches all are set to off. The SAR goes through a rapid cycle of internal writing to each switch in succession. On Each occasion, all switches are read at once and converted to a voltage level represented by the gas. The creation of analog signal from the digital construction is performed by a group of electronic components called an analog to digital converter, DAC. Comparing the DAC with the SH tells the SAR to keep the latest edition if it isn't overshot the target voltage from the SH. This process runs until the SAR has finished and changes from approximating busy state to a completed state. Reporting approximation, the STAR receives a write to output command and reads its registers one by one, setting the data line high or low for typically 5 minutes of a second. Then the next unit, all the registers are sent. Oh, sorry, I just got blown to smithereens. Are sent out in one or zero pulse train. For everything to be done in synchronism, the ATD requires a clock signal. Reset. The SAR is erased and the signals sampled. Additional deeper detail describes the comparator as a high gain voltage different amplifier with a negative input different A negative input difference is amplified to a large negative value, but limited to the value by the electronics to minus zero volts. And similarly, a positive difference is amplified to a large positive value, but limited to the electronics to supply level potential difference. Okay. There's a diagram of it. In 1987, I was helping clean out the Adelaide University Physics Laboratories. It was decided that a valve-based analog-to-digital converter built in the early 1970s was no longer useful. It was the size of a suitcase. Well, having had this experience gives nowadays rare perspective. On units 100,000 times smaller sitting on the UB sensors. Rather than throwing out this experience, it may be one day possible for students to go on a virtual reality tour inside an ADC. The key teaching points here is that the signal you are interested in can be mixed with noise that grows with noise and also grows weaker. I think also you need also there. It grows weaker over distances and obstacles. Can also have echoes from such things, seemingly easily good things as fingerprints and a plug. Small signal levels over any distance were not an option that had to be boosted before being sent. Are not an option. I say are. You still need them. Digital takes many snapshots at sufficient rates to make a movie. These snapshots are spelt out SNAPSOUT, one letter or 01 bit at a time. Unlike reading analog signals, the only binary decision has to be made. Is it one or not? It is necessarily a more involved process up front as it takes a sequence of steps, not unlike watching Fred Astaire do a tap dance. Imagining the time the ADD process took when, in 1987, it was explained to me that it would one day be done so quickly as to digitise a human voice. 1,000 kilohertz high pitch means 10,000 digitised points a second. I would have been forgiven I could have been forgiven for saying it would be 100 years before Joe Fictitious would call up his mates on telecom phone, and it would be live digitization. I think you could say two things. One, I was wrong by a factor of 10 in my time estimate, and two, some of the conversations in 1987 were incredibly boring. Okay, this is a new section, defunct concepts crisis. The introduction of utility box exposes a crisis in education, not necessarily for the students who get deeper insights into their experiments and who can go on to apply their knowledge in the workplace. But the crisis is for educators. At first, they need a base level of understanding of what's in the box. Looking through a clear box, the students see sensors connected to breakout boards and then flowing to controllers and communication boards and then through space eventually to their phone or monitor. Ideally, it's actually going rather well here. Would want the teacher to explain that there are little computers texting or pushing electricity along those wires. Support this, the next layer of understanding and how you might teach it has been discussed. The sensor information has been digitized, and in the past 50 years, the equipment used to do so has shrunk by a factor of 100,000. The student can't see this, and indeed many other sophisticated processes happening around them. The crisis emerges at the next step. Let's say at. When the student or teacher contemplates how it works, the internet term for a problem that has for the problem that has emerged would be termed a walled garden. The internet term, the internet. Let's put a question mark. That's not quite what I want to do. Question mark. Educators used a defunct pre-quantum mechanics atom, and by doing so, lead on to a series of incorrect explanations. It's the equivalent of having an excursion and only going to the souvenir shop, as you never knew about the rest of the gallery. I love that. The most glaring misstep down the path that leads to a walled garden of our schools is the Bohr atom. Most of an atom is not empty space, as is clearly stated in Bohr's Bohr's 1913 theory, and subsequently taught and examined in mainstream to this in the mainstream. I'm so bad at English. Gee, this strikes really blah frustrated. Science and technology did not take this path, avoided this path. And exploited the space-filling electron that when it fills a crystal can be put to work digitizing and broadcasting the sensor data stream for the utility box. The 18th century philosopher David Hume looked carefully about how we reason and provides some degree of insight into the failure of reason that produced a reasonable solution, and that at the end of the day is incorrect. Hume observed that at the heart of inductive reasoning is the uniformity principle that states that nature is uniform, so we can conduct an experiment, say neutralizing a base with an acid, and by induction go from this from the specifics of the experiment in the classroom to a general case of pH control in the skin and digestion. Hume was concerned about the strength of reason connected to religious miracles, prompted by extending the thinking of Newton. In this scenario, the fact that Bohr invokes three postulates, miracles, would immediately raise red flags for Hume. He would look carefully at how the uniformity principle was perhaps not used correctly. The emergence of quantum mechanics in the 1923 gives the correct answer, but also a definitive position on the missteps first taken by Bohr and then by the generations that followed. That's actually working rather well in this paragraph. Well, let's start with the atom being made up of two types of components, a single positively charged nucleus and many negatively charged electrons. The average radius of an atom is 100 picometers and the nucleus is 0.003 picometers. At this stage, the teacher, relying on the uniformity principle, might take the class. To an enclosed hall and hold a ball bearing to give a sense of the scale, sense of scale to the class. Inadvertently, the student would pick up that the nucleus had a surface, which it doesn't, and it excludes other objects from passing through its volume, which it doesn't. The electron permeates through the volume of the nucleus, and the nucleus sits in the middle of the electron. The electron has a mass of 1,836 that of a proton. I haven't yet seen teachers who has gone on to, although not explicitly citing, put a comment there, the uniform state that the students would reasonably expect the electron physically smaller than the nucleus by perhaps 0.25 picometers, and would be expected from as we would expect from everyday experience. Really badly structured paragraph there. Sorry, guys. The electron is around, in fact, has no surface but shape. All electrons of an atom slide through each other and the nucleus. They are visible as part of an atom interacting with light. As the part of the atom interacting with light, and they can cover, permeate, or paint large objects so they can be seen. A crystal, like a metal, the highest energy orbital is communal, and if the crystal has a trillion atoms, the orbital has a trillion electrons. Oh dear. Just fix. Each of the electrons spans the entire volume of the trillion atoms and occupies the same space over and over. I'll do that one. Each has a different shape and a wavelength pattern inside the crystal, leading to slightly different energy. An oscillating electric field from a light beam will distort the electrons, so they generate a reflected beam. Thus, when you look at a mirror, you're seeing microscopic electrons radiating the light falling on the surface. I love that. That's actually correct. Surely we can't go. We're going on. Okay. Schools teach the 1901 Drude model of classical electrons that bounce off ions. It has the benefit of providing easily accessible heuristic explanations, but the cost of engendering persistent misconceptions. Strategically, the initial short-term gain is cancelled by the long-term penalty in that devices that exploit the quantum all of crystal electrons becomes off-limit. Such crystals, with their crystal-spanning electrons, provide the working structures of the UB. There is a complicating factor that the Drury model is has an education upgrade, so that there is a misplaced confidence that it can manage, in theory, an explanation of semiconductors. There is deep confusion about the band diagrams and how they are 2D, a 2D production understood in 3D. That's got to really fix that. Momentum and speed of the electron is a dimension into the page. Each point of the diagram does not depict an actual electron, which has a 3D spin, but rather discrete properties of an electron that are single-valued, as they derive from a single-value quantum numbers. On position on the band is the place a position on the band is placeholder for no more less than four electrons, two spin and two directions of travelling wave, a positive and a negative momentum. The pairs of electrons form standing waves, while moving just one electron to a higher energy means there's a velocity. The idea that the hole migrating by translation filling in from the side and thus propagating hole is really an unnecessary exercise and deeply misguided. Wow, that's it. So that's taken me 40 minutes to read through that, and you can see that I'm moving and struggling. I'll eventually get on top of all of this. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.